Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, December 16th, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
So you heard it. It's no longer Vegas and Atlantic City. Right now, our region is the hottest market for online gambling in the entire country. Sportsbooks and casino apps, they've spent tens of millions of dollars advertising to folks in our area, way more than they spent in Las Vegas. And it's paying off because Pennsylvania and New Jersey pulled in more than $6 billion in online gambling revenue last year alone. The Commonwealth now gets more tax money from online casino apps than from physical lottery tickets. Mm. That's how much money they're making. But there is a cost to all of that. Helplines are ringing off the hook with people who've blown their savings. They lost their homes. They wiped out their college funds. And so today we're going to dig into the boom. We're going to look at the local fallout of online gambling and casinos. And we're going to spend some time looking at crypto casinos. Yes, Buttercups.
Yes.
It's a real thing.
I can see the question marks bubbling over people's heads right now. Crypto casinos. Yep. It's real.
It's real.
We're too old to know about them, but they exist. Yes.
The young people are flocking to them. So buckle up. It's going to be an interesting conversation. And we hope that you'll share your thoughts and experiences. Do you or someone you know, do they gamble online? Do you have concerns about all the ads that you are seeing? Share your story with us. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, drop the comments in the chat. And we're very interested in people who have gambled online. If you have an experience you want to share, if you know someone, please give us a call.
Yeah, Victor's already chiming in on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about those ads, and those ads are ubiquitous. Victor says, Kevin Hart should be doing something better with his talent than enticing people to lose their homes and families.
Hot take.
Kevin Hart does a lot of these sports betting ads, if you didn't know. Philadelphia native Kevin Hart. But yeah, I think this is an area where maybe perception lags reality. You ask the average person on the street, is Pennsylvania a hotbed of gambling?
I was shocked.
They would say
that.
No. That's Vegas. That's AC. Maybe it's in other countries, but no, Pennsylvania is one of the leading states when it comes to the prevalence of gambling and the revenue collected from gambling.
Yeah. $1 billion made last year alone just on online gambling. Mm. Okay.
888-477-9499 is the number. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Now a trio
of news stories. Avi.
Of local news stories. So here's the first one. And Cherry caught this one today. I'd missed this. This is really interesting. Philadelphia will be the venue for a major class action lawsuit that alleges Ozempic and other GLP-1 drugs cause blindness. The claim in this federal suit is that drugs such as Ozempic, Wegovy, Trulicity, and others trigger a condition that blocks or slows blood flow to the optic nerve, which can ultimately lead to blindness. And the news here is that the case is going to go before a federal judge here in Philadelphia. It's the consolidation of many cases that had been percolating in federal courts. And this is actually the second class action lawsuit about GLP-1s before the same Philly judge. The other one involves a side effect called paralysis of the gastrointestinal tract. So a couple of somewhat related but different cases looking at side effects of GLP-1s going to be heard here in Philadelphia. Could be big consequences to
those. Could be, because Philadelphia is one of those venues that people like to file lawsuits in and have them before our Philly judge and jury. By the way, the manufacturers of these GLP-1s, they're facing nearly 3,000 lawsuits at this point. But if you add up all, you know, and that's if you add up all the categories of lawsuits.
Sure.
But given the millions and millions of people who are on GLP-1s, that's not a lot.
It's a small percentage.
But I'll say that, you know, the vision issue is still very scary. It's very rare. But if you try to look it up, there's not a ton of information on this.
No, so much is emerging in this area right now.
And so
with the drugs themselves and the side effects.
Yeah. And so there's not a lot of information, but it's something that you should consider, talk to your doctor about if you're on a GLP-1. You know, but again, it's very rare, and a very small percentage of the people who actually use this are involved in these lawsuits. But, you know, people had heard about the gastro stuff, though.
Yeah. Maybe not the blindness.
But not the blindness thing.
Can I add a little bit of context here? So a couple notes. From the research that I was able to review, this is not like a toxic side effect.
No, no.
This is actually potentially a side effect of the drug doing what it's supposed to do, which is rapidly adjusting your hyperglycemia, your state of hyperglycemia, which then creates blood flow issues because it's working so fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I'll point out is that these drugs are, you know, approved to treat diabetes, complications from diabetes, and left untreated, that can lead to vision issues.
Yeah. A lot of people, you do lose their vision
because
of diabetes. Yeah.
So it's also a drug that helps address vision issues on a large scale, with some cases potentially of creating vision issues. So you want to consider both when you're thinking about whether to be on a GLP-1.
Yeah, because it was originally created for people with diabetes.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, something to think about. Second story, nearly 30 people have left the Chester County Elections Office over the past 4 years. This comes amid allegations of a toxic work environment. All of this comes as the Chester County Elections Office faces an investigation and scrutiny following an elections error that forced 12,000 voters to have to file provisional ballots this past election day. Interesting piece from the Philadelphia Inquirer. According to that reporting, the toxic culture allegedly began 4 years ago with the hiring of their voting services director. An employee filed a grievance 2 years ago, accusing that person of bullying employees. At the time, 15 of the 25 people from that office had quit. And that number has grown to 29 staff departures this year. The employee had previously feared that there would be, you know, problems caused by this mass exodus. They thought that, look, there's going to be some problems on election day. Our thousands and thousands of voters could be at risk. Everything has gone smoothly, of course, until this year, when there had been some errors. I mean, 75,000 voters were mistakenly
major errors,
left off the Chester County voter rolls, which had led to those people having to file those provisional ballots. And I will say this, that elections offices across the country had seen a lot of folks quitting because of burnout and because of threats that happened post January 6th. So this is not new. And the folks there said, look, you know, the voting services director refused or declined comment on this. And she says that her management style is collaborative. But this is definitely a red flag.
Yeah. Whether or not toxic work culture is to blame here, it is evidence that expertise matters.
And yeah.
You lose a lot of people. Yeah. You lose a lot of expertise. We're in a bit of an anti-expertise era right now, it feels like.
Goodness, yeah.
And I think it's worth noting that when people who know how to do the job leave en masse, it's a lot harder to do the job. And this particular job is very, very important.
Important, yeah.
Another story about important jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Hold for this one, folks. We could have a long debate on this show about the best bar in Philadelphia. But when it comes to the safest bar,
it's
gotta be Milk Boy at 11th and Chestnut.
Mm-hmm.
A lovely story here by Mike Newell in the Inquirer about this bar, Milk Boy. It's a small cafe, bar, and concert venue located, and this is important, across the street from Jefferson Hospital. So a lot of the clients are off-duty nurses and doctors.
Oh.
And there have been three recent cases where bar clients had medical incidents and Jefferson staff swooped in to save them, including a very recent one last week where someone had a heart attack, fell down, lost consciousness, and then a bunch of Jefferson pros swept in and revived the person.
Spent 10 minutes
doing
compressions, woke them up before the ambulance got there. I have to say, a fact that I researched is that you are twice as likely to have a medical incident while you're drinking alcohol. I don't know if the people who were at this bar were doing that, but
people do that at bars.
That's what you tend to do at bars. But they were really lucky. I mean, this was the bar that their medical incident happened.
This is the bar
nurses swooping in. And
doctors,
by the way, doctors.
There was a doctor one time who just had a defibrillator on him and saved
bam,
a guy.
Bam.
Yeah, bam, bam,
bam,
bam.
Bam.
Yeah.
Woke him up.
And I will say this, in addition to this being a very safe bar to drink at, I think it would be a fun bar to drink at because doctors and nurses have great stories.
I mean,
I want to be next
do.
On the next stool over with a doctor or nurse. You're going to hear some interesting stuff.
And by the way, it's super cheap. During happy hour, fries, Brussels sprouts, chips, and salsa, all $3. This will be a reason why the nurses and everybody goes there. They got Brussels sprouts for $3. That's healthy eating at the bar.
You like Brussels sprouts at the bar?
I do.
Yeah, it's a good bar snack if you just want to keep it reasonable.
And
$3
during happy hour.
That's a good deal. Although I will say, I don't want to... No aspersions cast in Milky Way. Sometimes those happy hour deals are a little too good to be true. The portions are skimpy.
It's like two.
So I'll go check it out. Yeah, I'll go check it out. We'll verify. We'll verify on the Milk Boy happy hour and how good a deal it is. But we can certainly verify, thanks to the Inquirer's reporting, that there's a lot of great people drinking
and
there.
Lives
saving
being
lives.
Saved.
Hats off to the folks at Jefferson. Hats off. Hats off to shirts off. A lot of people losing their shirts gambling.
And houses.
Right now.
Yeah.
The prevalence of gambling in the state of Pennsylvania and New Jersey has absolutely exploded. We're going to talk about it on the other side of this break. We want your thoughts. 888-477-9499. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Ali Wolfman Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Online gambling, from casino games to sports betting, has exploded in recent years. For the first time in Pennsylvania, online slots surpassed retail slots as a revenue source for the Commonwealth. And you can tell it's a lucrative business from all the ads we are bombarded with on TV and text messages and on social media.
And the Philadelphia region has become an epicenter for online gambling marketing, with companies pouring so much money into ads here. In fact, more money poured in here than anywhere else in the country, according to the Inquirer. Now, that's partly because Pennsylvania and New York or New Jersey are among a handful of states that legalized both online gambling and sports betting early on. But as the ads have increased, so has problem gambling.
Yes, and so we're going to talk about the rise of online gambling this hour with a focus on how it is impacting our region. And joining us to talk about it all is Max Marin, investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He has been tracking this issue. Max, welcome to Studio 2. So great to have you.
Hello. Great to be here.
Yes, and Jillian Russell is an assistant research professor at Penn State Abington and a lead author on Pennsylvania Online Gambling Report. Jillian, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you.
And of course, we want to hear from you in the audience. If you gamble online or know someone who does, we'd love to hear your story. And what do you think about this explosion in gambling advertising? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, hello. Drop a comment in the chat.
And so, Max, we want to set the foundation. When we say online gambling has exploded in this region and now Philly is the number one online gambling market, what can you explain? Like, what has changed? What has happened to make this the reality?
I think it was a couple factors. And number one, I think people get confused now because of the just sort of bombardment of advertisements that they get. A lot of people associate online gambling with just sports betting, but it is a lot more than that. I mean, casinos are fully virtualized now, and that makes up a considerable chunk of what we call like online gambling or iGaming or something like that. And it's not just limited to sports either. I mean, there are books out there. Like, I could make a four-way parlay on this radio show right now, betting that Avi is going to have like the last word and the Cherry's going to like open it up.
Wow.
You know, it's there's markets out there that are, you know, sort of expanding the scope of what we think of as gambling. And yes, it's all.
And did that shift? Did we have a moment in time where this was like, it just sort of, or did this just sort of drop in our laps? Because I was really shocked to hear about how much revenue was being generated in our region.
I mean, it was a small event a couple of years ago called the pandemic
that
I think would have been the sort of, you know, the turning point, like every sort of societal shift. I mean, there is a before and after. But I mean, I was talking to a lobbyist who has worked for online and you know, brick and mortar casino companies over the years the other day, and he was like, if it wasn't for online gaming, like, casinos wouldn't have survived the pandemic. It happened to be enabled just in time in Pennsylvania and New Jersey that allowed a lot of these casinos to just shift their business model online. But what also happened is that we had the, you know, the resurgence of these sort of national, you know, huge household names now, like DraftKings and Bet365, that have spread into this market as well. And now there's just dozens and dozens of different operators out there that you can access, you know, not necessarily based in Pennsylvania, but you can access them from your couch wherever you are.
Seems like the convergence of a few things. You mentioned the pandemic. Obviously, there's been a huge rise in smartphones and the technology on your phone that makes gambling, I guess, more fun and more accessible. But also there was, you know, change in laws right here in Pennsylvania, Max. Mm-hmm. Like this stuff only became legal within the last 10 years or so. And it does seem like the laws in Pennsylvania are a little more liberal than other states, which is surprising for folks who have to go to a state-run liquor store or can't get recreational weed in the state of Pennsylvania. It's strange, right?
You should be able to get the liquor on your couch, just like you're gambling.
I mean, so what changed in the laws of Pennsylvania, and how does Pennsylvania compare to other states?
Well, there's a bunch of different Pennsylvania's gambling laws, and Jillian might be able to speak to this better, but there are several tiers of regulatory bodies that are overseeing gambling in Pennsylvania. And, you know, we have horse racing, which is sort of a separate category, you know, with casinos and, you know, that have brick and mortar spaces. And, you know, we have the Gaming Control Board, which is also overseeing, you know, just the regulated online purveyors now. But, you know, as I think the critical thing that we mentioned in our story is we kind of like assess the rise of like what is the impact of this culturally in Pennsylvania and New Jersey is that we are the two of the six states in the U.S. that allow both, you know, the online games. So everything from like your online slots to, you know, live poker with a dealer somewhere to, you know, betting on the Sixers.
Yeah.
So it's,
you can do both of those things in Pennsylvania. Very few states that you can do both of those things legally.
Right. Yeah. Now, you know, the 2018 Supreme Court decision for sports betting was obviously integral for like opening up this massive, massive market nationwide. But, you know, each state is sort of doing things in a different way. And I mean, in some ways, it's, you know, Pennsylvania, it's like the whole, you know, the sort of horses off to the tracks now.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, we've allowed these things. These are huge, huge markets now, both for these companies and for, frankly, for Harrisburg and, you know, for lawmakers that are now seeing hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue generated from gambling that, you know, they're trying to find to put back into public use. And, you know, one of the things we kind of get into is like, well, like, you know, how much of that money is kind of going towards the people that maybe need it most for.
And we'll put a pin in that and get back to that in just a moment. I want to bring in a caller. We have Bill from Wyomissing. I apologize. Mm-hmm. Bill from Wyomissing on the line. Bill, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm a physician. I specialize in addiction medicine. And as your guests, I'm sure, know, addiction, behavioral addiction, such as gambling, is as real and as potent as physical addiction. And many of us in the field feel that that gambling addiction is probably our next fentanyl crisis in America. And the treatments are similar, but we don't have official medications like we do in opiate use disorder or alcohol use disorder when it comes to gambling use disorder. But there are medicines, there are treatments, there are psychological treatments. I want to applaud the you guys for having a program centered on this. I sit there with my colleagues, and we talk about how difficult this is and how it is underrated. So Thank you very much.
Can I ask you real quick before you go, Bill, just because we've got your perspective and it's an interesting one. Mm-hmm. Do you work with folks who are having problems with gambling? And what have you seen in terms of changes over the years if you are working one-on-one with those folks?
Yes, I have worked one-on-one. Full disclosure, it is not my primary specialty in field in the addiction world. I do mostly opioid and alcohol, methamphetamines. But yes, I have worked with several patients and referred them to my colleagues who do more specialized in that with behavioral. What I've seen and what my colleagues have, as we discuss it back and forth with patients, is it is rising exponentially. Mm-hmm. It is so easy. You know, fentanyl is at least illegal. You have to go out and buy it. Gambling, as your guest mentioned, it's right on your phone.
Yep.
You can do it from your bedroom. You can do it 24/7. It's perfectly legal and so accessible, much more accessible than cocaine, fentanyl or even alcohol for that matter.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill.
Bill from Wyomissing. Yeah.
And Jillian Russell is with us. I want to bring you in the conversation now because Bill said it's just exploding. You look into the data about how prevalent online gambling is here in Pennsylvania. You guys are trying to track this. What have you found in your research about the rise in online gambling and gaming here in the Commonwealth?
We have definitely seen it increasing. I think that's not surprising to anybody out there. We didn't start data collection until during COVID. That was our first wave of collection because that's really when things launched here in Pennsylvania. It was definitely fortuitous to the gambling industry that we finally launched our providers right during a time where people couldn't offer that offline form of gambling. So if you wanted to gamble, you really had to do it online. We also saw things moving online that really wouldn't have previously, things that not necessarily are regulated or legal. So things like raffles, that charity raffle that you used to participate in where you'd go in person, buy those tickets, a lot of those moved to online and some of them stayed online because they were making a lot more money that way. And many of those aren't necessarily regulated, which many people aren't realizing. A lot of people also got those introductions to those online slots, online sports betting, things that they would have maybe done in person or privately in the past.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your research. Have you seen increases in the numbers of people who are using online gambling as their form of entertainment and sort of like are there groups of people, age groups that are more susceptible?
Yeah, so it's in our earliest reports, again, around that 2020 time, it was only about 11% of adults here in Pennsylvania were participating in online gambling. We're now seeing upwards of 30% in our most recent report. Yeah, so it is definitely increasing, increasing quite quickly. We are seeing, too, one thing that is kind of consistent and not really surprising to most is that the people who are most likely to be engaging in this online gambling, they tend to be a lot younger than traditional forms of gambling. So these are people in their 20s, in their 30s, versus people who are in that brick and mortar gambling tend to be more in like their 40s, 50s, 60s. And it really appeals to men.
Yeah.
It's more of an even sex distribution when we look at the offline gambling, but it skews heavily towards men, the online forms.
One question I have for you, Jillian, and I want to bring in a caller who has a really interesting point to make in a second, but some people might imagine that this is just a one-to-one replacement. So folks that would have gone to casinos are now just doing it on their phones. So it's not necessarily a problem that's getting worse or an activity that's becoming more prevalent. It's just changing to a different form. Would the research support that? Or would the research say, with the shift to more online gambling, we're just seeing more gambling, period?
I'd say it's a complex question. Part of it is we have to think about how consumers have changed. If we look at Gen Z, Gen Alpha, millennials like myself, a lot of traditional forms of gambling don't necessarily appeal to us, but the things that are available online really do. And especially if we look at kind of these converging fields of gamblification of things, so adding gambling-like elements or straight up gambling to things, or gamification, adding like more video gaming elements to things. We have this like running gray area of like video games, which really appeal to younger folks and adding gambling there. So you're bringing an entirely new audience that previously maybe wasn't interested in gambling and now might be in this weird place where they're gambling and don't realize it.
Yeah, because you don't necessarily connect the money and the thing you're doing on the phone to gambling. By the way, we'd love to hear from you. If you gamble online or know someone who does, share your story. And what do you think about the explosion in gambling advertising that we are seeing? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, keep those comments coming in the chat. Avi had ever said we were going to do this. So I want to bring in a caller. We have Angel from Lansdale on the line. Angel, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, just a comment. I've never called before, but I feel so very strongly about this. When they began advertising for this, when it became legal for the area, I am not a person of color, but I feel like those people that are doing the advertising, the stars that we all know, I think somebody mentioned Kevin earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That I feel like they are targeting people. I see a lot of people of color doing it far more. To me, marketing towards anybody trying to gamble their money away is not a good thing. But I really feel like it just feels horrible the way
predatory,
that they've done this.
Yeah.
Exactly. Very predatory. Thank you. You took the words. And the other thing the doctor had mentioned earlier, of course, the state is making lots of money. But is any of that money coming towards the people that could benefit from it?
Great question, Angel.
Angel's teeing it up.
Really. All right. So, Max, you wanted to talk about this,
yeah,
right?
Thank you, Angel from Lansdale.
Pennsylvania's collecting a lot of tax revenue. And we will say, like, Pennsylvania really does tax at a high rate online gambling. It's not like a 5% tax. It's a pretty severe tax.
It's up there. It's one of the highest.
It's one of the highest taxes. So they're getting a lot of money. Where is the money going?
So they have several different funds that the money is sort of being diverted into. These are grant funds that counties across the state can apply to, that they're putting things back towards, like infrastructural projects, economic development projects. And then there's a certain amount of money that is earmarked for addiction treatment, which, you know, I think lawmakers, when they did pass this, they were kind of like, oh, we're going to have a couple problems downstream. And they did earmark, you know, a percentage of the money that is, you know, diverted every year based off of like how much revenue there is. So it will go up in proportion to the gambling revenues. And that is supposed to go towards, you know, funding the state, the 1-800-GAMBLER hotline, which you'll see these companies advertise alongside, you know, the ads, because they have to in order to be legal in Pennsylvania. They're like, you know, they have to sort of make the caveat, like, if you have a problem, you got to, you know, call us. And those, so that call line is like funded through this state grant pool, this pool of money you can imagine from that's, you know, being cut off.
But
it's not
like half of the pool of money is going
to
it's a small percentage.
It's a small percentage. Yeah. It is, you know, a fractional percent that is, you know, multiplied by the revenue.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's kind of hard to square. I did talk to some people and ask them, and I was like, do you think this is enough based on the sort of where the trends are going with this population? Because, you would certainly expect that maybe, you know, in proportion to the amount of gambling advertising you saw, like gambling resources were advertised just as much. And it's kind of like difficult to parse that because, like, as Angel said when she called in, that, you know, we're seeing it so often. It's not just the ads in between commercial breaks, too. It's woven into the experience. Like, Avi, I know Avi watches the Sixers. Yeah. But I'm like, you can't watch the game without it it being what they're like, and the Bet365 odds are off to the side of the screen right now.
The live line is now -3.5. Yep.
And I'm like, there's no way you can get me to bet on the Sixers because I've been watching the team for too long.
Yeah.
But it's...
Well, you can make a negative
everywhere.
Bet, I guess.
Yeah, but it's so part of our... And you're gonna, I'm like, I hear the animosity from people almost and the shock at just being like, why is this... Why can't I avoid this? You know, and it's kind of like, you can make the equivalent to like a beer commercial or something if you don't drink. You know, it's sort of there. You just sort of, it's into the background. But there's something about the gambling question that everyone gets really...
Yeah. MJ on Facebook says, at first, I supported gambling as a source of revenue for the state, but now I believe it's way too predatory. I wish gamblers would understand the axiom that the house always wins in the long run. Max, my follow-up question to you is, how dependent on this revenue is Pennsylvania? And I say that because we talked about this on the show last week. $1 billion made on online gambling, 5 times more than what they make on you know, like sports gambling. Your thoughts on like how dependent? I mean, if folks were to say, you know what, we're getting too much, maybe we need to cut back. Is this something that you're seeing Harrisburg saying, no, we really, this is a critical part of our budget?
I have talked to, there's, you know, one, some state lawmakers that are just, I think it's just sort of starting, to answer your question. There is, I think somebody told me the other day that, you know, Pennsylvania will deem it a crisis after the bridges collapsed. Yep. You know, there is sometimes a delayed reaction to anything, you know, whether you want to start, you hear comparisons to the opioid epidemic, you're going to, you know, are we going to wait until this is like a severe problem before we start reining in like the ad companies or whatever? You know, those are questions that lawmakers, I think, will start to talk about in a couple years. Yeah.
I want to read this amazing statistic from your story, Max. So calls about online gambling problems rose significantly more, 180% in Pennsylvania and 160% in New Jersey. In 2019, only about 1 in 10 Pennsylvania callers said online gambling was the main issue they were calling about. By 2024, it was every other caller. I am curious, Jillian, if we know whether or not problem gambling is more linked to online gambling than in-person gambling, or whether like the percentage of people engaging in both activities who will develop serious problems is about the same, or do we just not know?
So that was actually something that we really wanted to look at in our most recent report. And one thing that we've started doing is instead of conceptualizing these are our online gamblers and these are our offline, One thing that we're increasingly finding is that most people who gamble online do actually gamble offline as well in some form, whether it's just lottery or something else. We do see slightly elevated, so about 5% of those who gamble only online could be identified as a problem gambler, and this is from our most recent report. 1 to 2% of those who gamble only offline tend to be problem gamblers. But when we move into this mixed form of gambling, so those gambling both online and offline, it's somewhere in the realm of 13 to 20% of these individuals have a gambling problem.
That's a huge jump. So if you're engaging in both, the likelihood that you'll develop a problem is way greater. And I'm curious then, what should be the, I would say, public health response to this? Because Max mentioned, like, there's some guardrails around the advertising, and that you have to mention that there's a hotline people can call. Other than that, I'm not sure there are many other guardrails. Are there guardrails that could be put in place that other places are trying? And we could run the whole gamut here, from little fixes to outright prohibition. What's out there in the toolbox?
I think for me, the biggest thing is that I'm always an advocate for is prevention. Prevention is just, not enough is being done in the prevention space, if I'm quite frank. It's very uneven. So in some counties, they'll use one program, another county, they'll use another. Some counties, they'll be using nothing at this time. So it really varies from space to space. And kind of as I mentioned earlier, some people are gambling out there and don't even realize that they're gambling. So while we might have safeguards out there, how do you know to use those safeguards if you don't realize you're gambling in the first place? How do I know that 1-800-GAMBLER is a resource for me if I don't think that I am gambling? And that's what I have a problem with.
By the way, I want to give the hotline, our Pennsylvania gambling hotline, 1-800-GAMBLER. You can also call the 24-hour helpline at 1-800-426-2537. I did want to, and by the way, we'll list some other numbers as we continue. I wanted to ask a quick follow-up, Jillian, because I don't think people who don't gamble, they really don't understand what it is about gambling that sucks people in. Can you try to give us some concept or some understanding of why it's such a slippery slope, what gambling actually does to your brain to kind of make you go from this place where, oh, I'm just having a little bit of fun, to then you look up and you don't even realize it, but you've lost your mortgage money?
Sure. Yeah, it's... The one thing that I always like to say is gambling is very much like substance use. It's like alcohol. It's one of those things where when you start engaging, you can feel those things like that buzz, that rush. It can be very exciting and exhilarating. And some people are able to walk away. It's, I can have a single drink and be done for the night. But with gambling, it's, oh, this is a nice feeling that I'm getting. I want to experience this again. So now I might kind of be going after that jackpot that I got, or maybe even a near win where I got all the exciting lights, the exciting sounds. Oh, it looks like I won, but I bet 10 and I only won 5, but I still got that mini rush.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be chasing that feeling. So I'm going to be going after that, just similar to that high, that buzz that I was getting from a substance. And now I keep chasing it, but then it becomes this issue of, well, I got that same thing. I got that same win, but it doesn't feel the same anymore. So now I need to start upping the ante. I need to start betting more frequently. I need to be betting with more money just to get that same sensation I had before. And that's how things can kind of spiral out of control.
George on Facebook has an interesting comment. Says, I think it's pretty disappointing that our political leadership can't come up with more productive ways to grow an economy than to siphon money away from people who don't have much money to lose. We have another caller on the line. This is Charlotte from South Philly. Hey, Charlotte, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to just echo on your previous callers. I don't usually call in, but I feel really strongly about this topic, too, because I do feel the advertisements, but more than the advertisements, just the general acceptance, the greater acceptance that seems to be being pushed of what really is gambling is increasing, and it's kind of toxic to the environment, and you really can't get away from it. But beyond just these ads, you have the sports books with ESPN and other folks in the networks that show games partnering, but now I even heard recently CNN, I believe, is partnering with Kalshi. Maybe your experts know better than me, but that's outrageous to me. How can you have an organization that purports to report news partner with someone who wants to make bets on what's going to happen? And then
in real life,
incentives. incentives for folks who have insider knowledge, who can affect the outcome of things, to then act on it and then win. You're probably all familiar with the WNBA and the issues that have happened there with people throwing obscene things onto the court and then there being bets made about it to see if that was going to happen again. And that was found to be an insider thing. I mean, that's incredibly dystopian.
Yeah. There's the scandal side of this too, and the manipulation of the markets, which we haven't even gotten into. Mm-hmm. We'll put that aside for a second, but it's a good point to bring up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charlotte, in South Philly. We are piling on gambling quite a bit here, understandably so. People are quite concerned, Max. Is there any taste out there for prohibition or rolling this back in any way in Pennsylvania? Because when you get into that conversation, mm-hmm. people will point out didn't really work that well with alcohol, hasn't worked great with other what are categorized as vices. So is there an appetite out there for any type of tamp down here, or is it kind of just moving forward here in PA?
I mean, I think that there is an attitude, a prevailing attitude amongst regulators and people I've talked to that, you know, this source has already left the gate. You know,
yeah.
We are kind of just, we either can play catch up or we got to, you know, figure out there are ways to, you know, reduce the pressure and the impact. You know, I think everyone who seems to be talking about just feeling the pressure from the advertisers,
is a way. Yeah.
And maybe that's something that they look at because as the pool of people grows, one of the things we didn't really mention with Jillian's like excellent research and the survey that they now do annually is that we see the pool of gamblers growing, especially with sports betting. I mean, it is like $8.3 billion were wagered in Pennsylvania alone on sports betting. Now the house take is much smaller than it is for, you know, slots or table games and casinos. So people are getting into sports betting as a way, because you can theoretically, if you know the teams, you have a better edge, and
it's much more
people view it as a much more of a skill bet. There's much more knowledge and intelligence that goes into it that the house can't control. You know, you can get into the sort
and that's
of like
the gateway.
Yeah, the bet fixing scenarios and what that does to actual sports when players trust starts to erode around some of these betting scandals we've seen. But you have like an enormous amount of a growing pool of people, and with that growing pool of people, even a small percentage of the ones who are addicted becomes a much bigger share of the population.
And Matt, I wanted to just wedge this in there because we only have about a minute or so left on the show, but I gotta ask you, I mean, skills games coming up in Harrisburg, it's been a topic of discussion, people want them to be regulated. Any sort of like, have you looking into your crystal ball, are there things that people can put in this that need to be, you know, kind of on the table to make sure skills games don't ride down the same slippery slope?
I don't know. I think you're going to have one in the studio soon next time I'm here.
That's the way we're going. Yeah.
I mean, you sort of like people joke about it because it's almost like it does feel comical at some point when you walk into the gas station, there's a skill game. You walk, you know, you're on the bus, there's a guy gambling on his phone, and then you take the bus past the casino on your way down to downtown to work or wherever. And it's
everywhere.
It doesn't feel like it's going to be reined in anytime soon.
That's, I guess, what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. I'm trying.
So I guess we'll have this same panel discussion next year. I want to thank you both for being here. Max Marin, investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Great reporting, Max.
Always good to see you.
And Jillian Russell, professor at Penn State Abington, lead author of the Pennsylvania Online Gambling Report. Jillian, great insights this hour on Studio 2. Appreciate your time.
Yes, and we've been talking about the present state of gambling in our area, but let me tell y'all, the future looks even wilder. Coming up, we'll dive into the murky world of crypto casinos. Yes, you heard me right. Crypto casinos. That's ahead on Studio 2. Don't go anywhere. And if you have an experience to share, call us 888-477-9499.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We've been talking about the popularity of online gambling, the explosion in advertising in our region, and the increase in problem gambling. Now we want to turn to another form of online gambling that's grown into a multi-billion dollar industry. We're talking about crypto casinos. These are online casinos that use cryptocurrency and are largely unregulated. They also appear to be targeting young men.
Neil Betty is a reporter at the New York Times who was part of a recent investigation into crypto casinos. He joins us now to tell us about these online sites. Neil, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and for you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, our question for you this hour is, do you gamble online? What has your experience been like? And do you think there should be more regulations around online gambling and advertising? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, put your comments in the live chat.
Heather on Facebook says, I hate that my sons are bombarded with commercials about gambling while watching football. We're going to talk about the bombardment of advertisement and targeted advertising with this conversation in a moment. But first, Neil, I think folks need an explanation here. What makes crypto casinos different than the other types of gambling that you can do on your phone with, you know, poker, blackjack, slots, et cetera?
Yeah, so crypto casinos offer all of that, but they are on websites where you can gamble with cryptocurrencies instead of traditional dollars or other currencies. But what really makes them so unique is how popular they've gotten on social media. They've really tapped into the internet culture, popular with young people, with teenagers, and they've basically created a whole online marketing system using live streamers and social media influencers.
So this is where we get into the advertising part of the conversation. How did they do that? How did they build up this big, it seems like mostly male, mostly young, online following, given that it is pretty similar in structure to other types of gaming?
That's a great question. I think it all stems from their push to advertise through live streamers. Live streamers are people who are making videos live, talking to their audiences. They first became big with video game streamers. Teenage boys especially liked watching famous influencers play video games live. These crypto casinos decided to tap directly into that culture. They started paying people to stream themselves gambling on their sites instead of playing video games. And once they started getting more and more money, they started paying some of the most famous people on social media to do the same. Yeah. And now you have Drake making videos promoting these sites. You have famous video game streamers making videos promoting these sites. It's really spread across the internet.
And by the way, we want to play a clip because this is Drake sort of live gambling on a streaming site with his friends. Take a look and listen.
What up, Ken?
Hey, congrats.
He's got the whole squad with him, by the way. Let's see if we hit this right here. Two! Yes! Yes, sir! Yes, sir!
And that's, if you can't see it, but there's Drake at the top with his friends, with his phone out. There's a roulette wheel sort of spinning, and they are live watching this game. Why is this effective, Neil?
Exactly.
It looks cheesy to me.
Why do I care if Drake wants some money? He's already got too much money. Yeah.
Why does this work?
It's a great question, and I think it stumped me and my fellow reporters, Eric Toller and Jenny Ventus, when we first started reporting on this. But as we started speaking to teenagers, we realized they just really enjoyed watching people gamble, the highs, the lows. It's the same culture of video game streamers. I don't understand why those are popular either, but people like them, and especially young people like them. And so I guess they figured out how to do the same thing for gambling.
Yeah. And my follow-up to you is this. I mean, are we seeing a lot of these young people who are underage? Because in a regular, you know, brick and mortar casino, you can't get in without showing some ID. Are they able to skirt sort of age restrictions because it's crypto, because it's online?
That's the scary thing about these websites. They are not licensed in the U.S., which means they aren't legal in the U.S. They are licensed in small island countries like Curacao, where the rules aren't as strict. And so their identity verification to ensure that you are old enough to gamble, to ensure that you are in a country where their sites are legal, aren't as strong. And we even spoke to teenagers who are using these sites all the time, that are at school and know all their friends are playing on these sites. It seems like a very common activity that anyone can get their hands on.
Yeah. And quick follow up to you, Neil. I know you profiled you in your reporting, like an example of a young teenager who got caught up in this, used parents' money. Tell us one of those stories.
Yeah, so the story starts that we published last week with David. We use his middle name to protect his privacy. But David started gambling on these sites when he was 14 years old. Mm. It was 2021. He was still remote learning online a lot during the pandemic. And he started seeing some streamers he followed gamble. And he decided to try it out. And I think he told me on day one, he was immediately hooked. He got one big run of wins and he just needed to do it again and again and again. And that was 4 years ago. He's 18 now. He's still gambling. He graduated high school with a gambling addiction. He understands this habit is destructive and harmful to himself, but he just can't stop.
Hmm. I want to make sure we don't gloss over this point a little bit, because for folks like myself, I'm not even going to say old folks, but most people don't really understand how something that is illegal here, mm-hmm. you could still get access to it from a computer in this country yeah. relatively easily without a ton of technical expertise. Can you just explain that a little bit more in detail, how a 14-year-old, and I'm not saying plenty of 14-year-olds are plenty smart, but I mean just an average 14-year-old can get around the laws that would prevent someone from accessing a crypto casino?
It's a really good question, because many of these sites now will have location blockers. If yeah. you're logging on from the US, they'll say you can't log on from here. But there's software online that anyone can get that can hide your location. And there are different ways to skirt past different types of restrictions like that using software that is readily available online. The other thing that we noticed was that many of these teenagers are on chat rooms that openly discuss how to get around identity verification, openly discuss how to access these crypto casinos. And it seems like something that is very, very simple for them.
And that, I feel like that brings us back to something we were discussing earlier, where we had puzzled looks in our faces, like, why does anyone care if Drake won a roulette spin? Who cares? And I think my guess is that it's that community feel. So folks are swapping secrets about how to get access to these websites in the communities created by these streamers. They're enjoying the successes or losses of Drake in these communities together. It feels like that's like a linchpin that makes all of this happen. Did you get any insight into kind of the community created in these streaming communities?
Yeah, you definitely got that right. Each of these streamers seems to create their own community because they want to build their own followings. And so they have their own chat rooms where their fans get to talk to each other. The streamer will talk directly with them, make them feel included. A lot of the conversations are about gambling. And there's something also a little dark going on behind the scenes, which is these streamers are getting paid a commission every time one of their fans places a bet. And so they do want to encourage, they want a community, they want fans that keep coming back, and they want fans that gamble a lot. And so that is what they're encouraging, and that's why they create these online communities.
So interesting. I want to ask you one more question, but I want to get in Craig from Salisbury Township, who's on the line. Craig, you're on Studio 2, and we're nearing the end of the show, so could you keep it brief? But we'd love to hear your question or comment.
Yes, ma'am. It's all about freedom of choice, sir. If you have an addictive personality, you would not live above a bar. But then you're restricting access if somebody owns a business, if they want to gamble. There's always going to be available like crack if you want to get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why? I don't need any more government or anybody telling me anymore what I can and cannot do.
Thank you. That's Craig from Salisbury Township. If people want to gamble, let them gamble. I want to ask you this, Neil, because one of the arguments for allowing this type of thing for folks who like Craig and other folks is like, look, you know, the state makes a lot of money. We get a lot of revenue with cryptocurrency. Who's making the money here?
Hey, it's all the casinos. These sites aren't licensed in the U.S. They aren't going through any regulatory restrictions in the U.S. So they're also not paying taxes in the U.S. And that means the money is just going to the casinos. And there's a second part of that that's a problem, which is if they're not licensed here, they're not being regulated here. That means no one's double checking that the games are fair, that enough money is returning to the players. These are all things that gambling commissions here in the U.S. are supposed to be doing.
Yeah, so we don't know if the odds are what they say the odds are. No one's able to check that. What can U.S. mm-hmm. regulators and lawmakers do about crypto casinos? Because it sounds from what I'm hearing like I'm going to throw my hands up and just say, okay, this is happening. I got no control.
Getting the kids, is no there regulation. Any,
is there anything, Neil, as we wrap up, that U.S. lawmakers and regulators can do here?
That is a very good question. So far, they've been limited, and they don't have jurisdiction because these sites are overseas. It's complicated because they're using cryptocurrencies, so you can't just tell the bank to stop letting them use their institution. There are other ways, possibly through shaming them, through telling the influencers that this is bad. I know that when we reached out to Snoop Dogg, who was partnered with one of these casinos, he ended his partnership after we reached out. But I think you also bring up another point, which is the lawmakers and the regulators we spoke to seem to be one step behind. They are still catching up. And I think you talked about this the entire show. Meanwhile, the kids are just so technically advanced these days, and they are 10 steps ahead.
Yep. But at least a little sunlight as disinfectant, thanks to Neil and his team. Hey, Neil, Betty, reporter on the visual investigations team of the New York Times, thank you so much for your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
And by the way, again, the Pennsylvania Gambling Helpline, 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-426-2537. Thanks to everybody who called in. And thanks to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Adam Staniszewski, and Tina Calique engineered today's show. So thank you. And our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you tomorrow.